People of Jewish descent are prohibited from running stores and workshops, as well as from trading in goods or services within the German Reich. A new automotive speed record of 432 kilometers per hour is set on an ordinary road. The first Superman comic is published in the US. In Berlin, the Zeus Z1, the precursor to modern computers, is built and nuclear fission discovered. German troops march into Austria. The year is 1938.
At 77, the Robert Bosch Company's founding father still wore his trademark full beard, even though the clean-shaven look had been in fashion for almost 20 years. He had also lost none of his mental acuity or remarkable farsightedness. The political developments in Germany were of such grave concern to him that, with Bosch restructured from a stock corporation to a closed corporation, he decided to take a further important step towards securing the future of the business and his life's work by setting down his final wishes in his will.
But how was he to ensure that future generations didn't misunderstand him and that they would run his company as he intended? What times might they have to guide his company through? He had personally lived through the First World War and witnessed the general evaporation of reason and compassion from the political arena. Faced with the prospect of another catastrophic failure of the political system, Robert Bosch felt the time had come for reflecting on the past.
From the outset, Robert Bosch regarded his business from two equally important angles. The first was the business angle. As an entrepreneur, he considered himself responsible for the company's economic viability. The second angle was his workforce. Bosch believed that his own good fortune was inextricably linked to that of his associates. It was a view that certainly set him apart from other industrialists of the time. He introduced an 8-hour working day, while work on a Saturday afternoon ended much earlier than in most other factories. And when his plants and offices remained closed on May the 1st, the holiday celebrating the labour movement, he was nicknamed Bosch the Red. On top of all that, he paid significantly higher wages than his peers.
Now, I don't pay good wages because I have a lot of money. I have a lot of money because I pay good wages. In my idealism, I'm really a materialist, wise enough to realize that I can't be the only one to benefit.
Philosophically and ethically, Bosch favored partnerships and symbiotic relationships. The industrialist founded Bosch Hilfe, a retirement and social welfare scheme. He built apartments for rent and offered loans to associates wanting to build their own homes. In return, he demanded discipline and quality consciousness, while knowing that these things also came at a price. One of the vital areas Robert Bosch sponsored and promoted from early on, right up to the end of his life, was training and education. He viewed education as the only potentially successful way of improving the world.
The aim should not be to stuff people's heads full of all sorts of things that have to be learned by rote in order to pass an exam. Rather, they should gain insight into the correlations between historical, economic, and strictly human issues. Such individuals know what's possible and have the skills to see reality for what it is and act accordingly, to hold their own financially, and to recognize fallacious ideas.
As soon as Robert Bosch had the means, he channeled them into his social commitment. His efforts developed continually over time and, during the First World War, became a defining facet of his activities. All the profits, 20 million German marks, earned through the production of armaments were donated to charitable causes. Robert Bosch became a major philanthropist. But he was not interested in gratitude. Throughout his life, he felt an aversion to honours and awards, refusing to accept medals or honorary doctorates when all he had done was provide funds. He considered such behaviour unseemly. Even simple thank you letters were sometimes met with displeasure.
Hello, Bosch speaking. I've just received your letter from yesterday and feel compelled to tell you that wasting your working hours with uncalled-for thank yous is highly inappropriate. Such things are better put aside for happier times. I believe it is important for all of us to simply do our duty. I don't mean to disparage your good intentions. What I mean to say is that...
Following the outbreak of war in August 1914, the mayor of Stuttgart had received a donation of 100,000 marks as an initial sign of solidarity and for use at his discretion. He responded with a letter of thanks. In reply, the donor expressed the opinion that there were more urgent matters to attend to than composing thank you notes.
Immediately after the war, Robert Bosch recognised the pressing need for better political education. The German Empire had collapsed, and for the first time, people were living in a democratic society. Not everyone knew what to make of the new order and its myriad possibilities. Many would have preferred to have Kaiser Wilhelm back. At the same time, the intense political and economic pressure being exerted by the victorious powers was creating a climate that encouraged the spread of right-wing extremism. To counter this trend, Robert Bosch and other liberal thinkers of his day advocated the founding of the German Academy for Politics in Berlin, which was to operate independently of political ideologies. It was to serve as the hub for the intellectual and moral reconstruction of Germany, and ultimately for the birth of a new Europe.
In time, Robert Bosch's philanthropic commitments as a global citizen had become so extensive and multifaceted that the duties that went with them were almost unmanageable. When he could no longer keep up with the flood of requests, petitions, and pleas, he employed representatives, each of whom was an expert in a particular field of charity work. From now on, they would assist in directing aid to the appropriate channels. As far back as young Robert could remember, homeopathic remedies had been used in the Bosch household when someone fell ill. Throughout his life, Robert Bosch remained a staunch supporter of this tradition and sought homeopathic treatment at the Deaconry Hospital in Stuttgart whenever he required medical attention.
In the year 1900, when the hospital director died, this privilege was discontinued, and his successor refused to maintain the service. Like many proponents of conventional medicine, he considered homeopathy to be nothing more than superstition. In response, town residents initiated a movement with the intention of building a homeopathic hospital.
In 1914, Robert Bosch offered the Hospital Association financial assistance. An agreement paved the way for establishing the Stuttgart Homeopathic Hospital. The sum that Robert Bosch put at the association's disposal was so substantial that planning and construction of the facility could get underway. Unfortunately, only the foundation walls had been built when the outbreak of World War I halted work on the site as materials and manpower dried up.
In the immediate aftermath of the war, it wasn't possible to pick up where construction had left off. Yet the drive behind the project remained unshaken, and in 1920, means were sufficient for an interim hospital. This facility would be operated until the Bosch Clinic was completed. It soon became apparent that there was still a long way to go. Inflation and the economic crisis had to be overcome before a second attempt could get underway. Finally, in 1937, 17 years later, there was light at the end of the tunnel. A new building site, new plans, and a new start to construction. But again, the state intervened. Building materials were rationed. They were now needed elsewhere, in the rearmament program in preparation for a new war.
This time, fortunately, strings were successfully pulled. The client had the foresight to put former Chief of Police Paul Hahn in charge of construction. Thanks to his skill and determination, the hospital, designed almost four decades earlier, was completed on April the 10th, 1940.
This hospital will provide treatment based not only on homeopathic principles, but also on all other methods that have proven effective. I personally believe that injections and even surgery may be called for in acute cases, although I prefer to manage chronic conditions with homeopathy. This is a layman's opinion, but as I'm no expert, I can offer no other.
His attitude to the new ruling powers in Germany was decidedly more uncompromising. They invited him to their party conventions. He declined. They asked for financial support. He refused. Adolf Hitler requested a one-on-one meeting. Although the meeting took place, the two men had nothing to say to each other. When Jewish youths were barred from schools, Robert Bosch offered them apprenticeships. He also made funds available to allow imprisoned Jews to emigrate.
The company's board included members of the resistance movement, such as Robert Bosch's private secretary, Willy Schlossstein, managing director Hans Walz, and former mayor of Leipzig, Karl Friedrich Gödeler, who had been appointed as an advisor to the company in 1937. A few years later, Gödeler was involved in planning the assassination attempt on Hitler, and, in the event of its success, would have succeeded him as Chancellor.
Although Robert Bosch was aware of the resistance cell, the extent of his knowledge is unclear. As he was already 80 years old, the members didn't want to burden him unnecessarily, and his own worries weighed heavily on him as it was.
How was he to preserve his company, his foundation, his life's work and the spirit that sustained it for a more promising future? Who would assume the task of safeguarding it? His son, who had fallen terminally ill while still young, had died in 1921 at the age of 30. In the wake of this tragedy, his marriage to Anna had collapsed. His second wife had borne two more children, a son and a daughter, but at 8 and 10, they were still much too young.
The moment had come to ensure that his life's work would continue after he had gone.
It is a matter dear to my heart that my company should be safeguarded in its substance for as many future generations as possible, and that it should remain at all times financially independent, autonomous, and able to take appropriate action. As a matter of principle, the executors of my estate are expected to secure these business activities over a long period of time, not only their bare existence, but also a strong and meaningful development to ensure their continuance through the inevitable difficulties and crises of the future.
The ink had barely dried before war broke out once again. A war through which the company would have to be steered and the spirit of its founder preserved. Robert Bosch would not live to see the end of the hostilities. On the 12th of March 1942, he died at the age of 80. He did not know that 2 years later his factories would lie largely in ruins, nor did he know whether his final wishes would ever be successfully executed. At least he could be certain that he had entrusted the task to capable hands. As soon as the Second World War was over, Robert Bosch's executors began to carry out his wishes. It took a number of years to meet his first demand, that the company's existence be secured and its strong and meaningful development ensured.
Once reconstruction was complete and the company had been stabilized economically, work could begin on the second major demand from Robert Bosch's will.
The focus was on alleviating hardship. The will had specified that this task should be performed through international reconciliation, health care, and the promotion of education. Robert Bosch wanted his successors to find a way to realize his wishes while adapting their efforts to the times at hand. This principle formed the basis for the Robert Bosch Trust, a non-profit organization, and the programs it offers.
Today, the Robert Bosch Trust holds 92% of the capital stock of the Robert Bosch Company. The Trust receives a portion of the dividend. As a non-profit organization, however, it is not involved in entrepreneurial activities.
The Trust focuses its activities exclusively on social projects in a wide variety of areas, including science, health, international relations, education, society, and culture.
I would rather lose money than trust. Robert Bosch, pioneering and pragmatic, humanist and humanitarian. Female narrator, Emily Clark Brandt.
Male narrator, Rob Quirk. Robert Bosch, Armin Schwing. Written and directed by Michael Esser. Sound design, Volker Zeigermann. Sound effects, Martin Langenbach. Sound editor, Alexander Gerhard. Music, Ben Esser. Production, Campfire Media, Hamburg.